the hate of men will pass, and dictators die. And the power they took from the people will return to the people. Let us all unite!
Well, welcome back, folks. You're in the Corporation Nation. I'm Clint, your host. Today with us is Ted Weiland. Ted's website is BibleVersusConstitution.org. That's all spelled out, versus BibleVersusConstitution.org. Again, on that website, you can go to the second link down in the important links section. You can type, take the little survey there. Is the U.S. Constitution a Christian document? Spoiler alert, it is absolutely not a Christian document. And you can also read a very large portion of the book online. And I'm going to give it my high recommend. I don't do that on a lot of things. But this has been very, very spiritually awakening for me personally. The words in this book are quite incredible. Now, Ted, I want to give you the floor here. If I had my choice, I would like to start on Article 6 of the Constitution, and I just wanted to read one quick Bible verse that you included in here, because I think this is so important. Well, you say this is why the Constitution is the single most important issue facing Christians who hope to reclaim dominion in fulfillment of their new covenant commission. And you quote 2 Corinthians 10, 4 through 6. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses. We are destroying speculations and every lawful lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God, and we are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ, and we are ready to punish all disobedience whenever your obedience is complete. Now, when I go, and again, and I go over to the legal realm, and I go to Black's Law, it's funny because, you know, my understanding of what you were talking about with the tree of the knowledge of good and evil simply is the tree of the knowledge of what is natural and real and what is artificial. This is how Black's Law describes natural fruits. Remember, don't eat from the tree, the fruit of the tree of good and evil. Well, natural fruits is defined as the produce of the soil, of the fruit trees, bushes, vines, etc., which are edible or otherwise useful or serve for the reproduction of their species. The term is used in contradistinction to artificial fruits. For example, such as by a metaphor or analogy, are likened to the fruits of the earth. What does it say then? It says, of the latter, an example of an artificial fruit is interest on money. The perfect example of the concept that is the fruit, the artificial fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Suddenly they realize they're naked, for instance, going from innocence to, this sort of artificial sense of... Oh, I don't know what the word for that is, but Ted, take it away. If you don't mind, let's get into Article 6, because I think that's very important.
Well, Article 6, for those who may not immediately be aware of it, is the article that establishes the Constitution and all laws created, quote-unquote laws, created under its jurisdiction, including treaties and all other sundry laws. Are the supreme. It's what establishes the Constitution and its sundry laws as the supreme law of the land. Now, that should, if for any Christian who recognizes God as sovereign, and even if they're not of a pronomian mindset of one who has been looking at the law, the moral law is still applicable today, that still should set them back and say, wait a minute. And let's not forget, these guys were intelligent fellers. They understood the word supreme and its intent and its application. And when they said supreme, they meant supreme. You know, the very fact that, except perhaps as the, we're not sure this is their intent, but perhaps as the timekeeper of the document in Article 7 in the year of our Lord, in that phrase. Except for that, the Constitution knows nothing of God. The Constitution knows nothing of Jesus or Yeshua the Christ. The Constitution knows nothing of the morality of our God, nothing of his laws. And therefore, when they used the word supreme, they didn't recognize a superior law to what was supreme. Supreme is supreme. And by the way, in order to have a supreme law, you must have a supreme being. Well, who was the supreme being that created this law? Lost his name. Patriot who wouldn't go smelled a rat. Patrick Henry,
yes.
Of course. Patrick Henry would maybe question this, but it was we the people. Really, that was a guise. That was a facade. It was these framers and these Enlightenment guys who created it all and just used the we the people as a means of accomplishing their coup d'etat. But
sort of the name of God.
It starts off with we the people are the ones who accomplished this and has created this supreme law, and therefore that makes we the people once again the supreme being or the God in opposition to the God of the Bible and his laws, since the two are antithetical and opposed to each other.
Well, now why is this so important to note specifically that the Constitution is so, if you will, I hate to say anti-Christ, but it certainly seems to be a fitting description. And of course, the only way we can know the answer to that question is to understand what was happening before that time. And you referenced the history of the United States, 1874, where the leading men in 1639 and the men of New Haven held a convention in a barn and formally adopted the Bible as the Constitution of the state. And, you know, it seems to me that the reason that these guys got together and created this Constitution is because they could not control these Christians, those darn Christians who are following the law of the Bible instead of the laws of, as you say, the enlightened, the higher law, the legal language. You know, it seems like the whole point was to get control over these sort of, you know, if you will, what they would call lawless, because you can't only be under the law of God. That's the law of nature. That's horrible. That's not created by us. We can't be your creator and therefore your controller. That seems to be the purpose.
You know, actually, I think, Clint, that it was more of a recognition of their sovereign, and recognizing, therefore, that his laws are supreme and not their own, which is the exact opposite of what we find taking place in the 1700s. They did not acknowledge Yahweh, God of the Bible, as sovereign. Instead of establishing his laws as the standard for their lives and society and government, they established what was basically the Enlightenment and Masonic concepts of the day. And why is this important? Well, because for the very reason that they did what they did, we find ourselves where we're at today. Our featured blog article is on the right at the beginning, the top of the homepage, and it's entitled Five Reasons Why the Constitution is Our Cutting Edge Issue. And if they would, those that would be visiting the site, if they will look at particularly number three, they'll see that because the framers and the late 18th century founders did not establish, put aside the fact that there's hardly an article or amendment that's not antithetical to God's sovereignty and morality, put that aside, those are sins of commission. Even by their sins of omission, by a not establishing government society upon his laws, is why, for example, we have a homosexual agenda in America today. They didn't have that problem in the 1600s. It's why we have mosque and an Islam influxion into the country. It's why we had a Fort Hood bomb massacre and a Boston bombing. And the list just goes on and on. It's why infants are being murdered in the womb today, because they did not establish government and society upon God's laws, it was inevitable that we would end up where we find ourselves today. It was a capricious law rather than the immutable law of our God, by which is perfect and by which establishes a perfect society as long as we keep his laws and abide by them.
And this is a very a very reasonable and rational argument. It's not just a religious type of view, but let me read what you wrote in your own book, quoting people when they're live. This, you use 2 Corinthians 6:14 through 18 to make your point here. On both the federal and state levels, Jews were instrumental in the removal of the Christian test oaths and were the first to reap the rewards of these prohibitions. Now, you mention a few times in the book that before the Constitution came along, in order to be a government official, to be in politics, you had to literally testify to the quote-unquote people, if you will, that you were, in fact, Christian, that you were to abide by God's law, therefore giving you the responsibility and also the liability to be basically taken from your position when you don't. But Corinthians, 2 Corinthians 6:14, it says this totally, you know, reasonably and logically verifies what you just said. Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with unrighteousness? How can we live together? And what communion hath light with darkness? What concord hath Christ with Belial? Or what part hath he believeth in an infidel? And what agreement hath the temple of God with idols? You know, it's such a perfect point. How can we accept all of this stuff from other religions if we're a Christian nation? Doesn't make much sense. We'll be back, folks. All right, folks. We are back. Now, I want to appeal to people's reason here again. Because, you know, in my personal opinion, and after going through the Bible as I have, even the notion of divinity refers back to the pure logic and reason that the Bible presents as its law. It's not something that you can say, oh, no, that's horrible. You can't look at it and say that's tyrannical or that's this or that's that. It's a way of life. And I appeal to your reason, folks. Why do you think it is that we have Jewish American dual Israeli citizens being appointed left and right to the highest places of government? Why do you think that they are then granted the power of the president, who basically doesn't have to answer to or ask Congress to do anything, thanks to his emergency powers, which he delegates to all these appointed people? How have different yokes been infiltrated our government? It's really simple. I mean, it's just through the political process that's been set up. And when this says, be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers, what does yoke mean, folks? It means a mark of servitude, slavery, or bondage, chains, a bond of connection, like marriage, the yoke of marriage. It means service, to couple or to join with another. You tell me, Ted, our guest Ted Weiland today of BibleVersusConstitution.org, you tell me how that is at all, in any way, shape, or form, a Christian notion that we should actually be in service to every other religious notion and law, God law, which is religion out there, every form of government, and what is colloquially called multiculturalism. Why would you, in a quote-unquote Christian nation, if that were the case, which it's not, which you've proven beyond a doubt, how could that possibly be a good thing when all the laws must then be made, and of course Article 6 is so important in this regard, all the laws must be made to respect every single possible religion, whether that be Christianity or whether that be Satanism. You tell me how that is a Christian nation.
Well, and another question is, why in the world would Christians honor and promote a document that does what you've just explained? what you've, one of the things that you've just, without saying it, that you've commented upon or said, it describes the very first commandment, that we shall have that we're not to have any other gods other than Yahweh, the Creator. And yet, probably the part of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights that Christians hang their hat on more than anything else in the document is Amendment 1. Despite the fact that Amendment 1 is a violation, Amendment 1's, in particular, Amendment 1's free exercise clause, is a unequivocal violation of the First Commandment, that thou shalt have no other gods. The First Amendment's free exercise. Well, let me put it this way. When the late 18th century founders replaced the First Commandment, found intact in some of the colonial constitutions, the 1600 colonial constitutions, when they replaced the First Commandment with the First Amendment's First Commandment violating free exercise clause, America was quickly transformed from what had been a predominantly monotheistic Christian nation in the 1600s to arguably the most polytheistic nation in existence that rivals and I think probably outdoes in this regard even the Roman Empire. And yet that's the part of the Constitution or the amendment, that Bill of Rights, that Christians hang their hat on. The very part that violates the very first commandment establishing Yahweh as our God.
It's really amazing when you think about the blindness. The blinders are really on with people. And, you know, I can say with all sincerity that before I became what I am today, which is strictly just a primary researcher or reader of things, a study of all things that I can get my hands on, you know, 5-6 years ago, I was in love with the idea of multiculturalism. I was in New York for several years, living in the most multicultural place you can imagine on Earth. And at the time, I thought it was cool.
Well, isn't it cool? Let's add this to the irony. You know, most Christians are, at this stage of the game, particularly since 9/11, are extremely concerned about the Muslim influx into this country. Well, they need to ask if we're going to stop this, we've got to get to the genesis of the problem. And the genesis of the problem, it's unequivocally the First Amendment's free exercise clause. They wouldn't be here. There were no mosques. There were no practicing Muslims, I guarantee you, in 1600s America. Therefore, there has to be a defining moment in America's history when the Christian character and course of America was drastically altered.
I know exactly what you're going to say.
That moment was in 1787 in a clandestine meeting up in an upper room in Philadelphia. All of a sudden, you know, it didn't happen immediately. God's grace preserved us so that we didn't immediately come under all of his curses found in Deuteronomy 28:15 and following. But it happened slowly, incrementally, and not so incrementally lately. And that is the reason. There is no question that it's the First Amendment's free exercise clause that's the genesis of why Islam is proliferating and converting our posterity to their religion today in America. There would have been no Fort Hood massacre. There would have been no Boston bombing, and who knows what else, if they had established the same government that we find in the 1600s based upon the First Commandment.
Well, and this goes back to when the Constitution states that this Constitution is the law of the land, the law of the corporation, if you will. And it doesn't just say that the Constitution is. It says that all treaties are also to be the law of the land. And so where did this notion of welcoming all these different religious tendencies? Well, how about the Treaty of Tripoli, where it specifically says, and again, treaty, that means that is the law of the land, the government of the United States, I quote, the government of the United States of America is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion. Why is that so important? Well, this was a treaty with the Muslim men. This is a treaty with the Muslim men. Okay, this, the Treaty of Tripoli, of Barbary, in Article 11. And then you make a really good point in here as well, Ted, that guess what? What about the United Nations Charter? Because you quote from the United Nations Charter from Article 6. You say the charter has become the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, and anything in the constitutional laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. I mean, when the United States becomes a state or nation of the United Nations, all is lost. I mean, there's no point in having a United States at all when you become just a single state of another union. But it's a treaty, right? It's a treaty, so that's the law of the land. The whole thing was set up as a trap, it seems to me. So, anyway, Ted Weiland's my guest. We'll be back, folks. Stay tuned.
...stripped you of your liberty, privacy, civil rights, and dignity. You want some more?
We're talking to Ted Weiland today. That website, again, is BibleVersusConstitution.org. Again, you can take the survey there. Ted has graciously offered to send people the free book, which I have in my hand, actually. It's a primer to the very much larger book. It's called Bible Law versus the United States Constitution. And again, I don't have Ted here just to fill up time here. I don't have any guest here to fill up time. I'm in it to win it, okay? So what we are talking about today is in the top three, at least, perhaps even to the top one of things that we need to be talking about in our society, things that should be obvious, which for some reason are not. I suppose that's the nature of the devil, of the adversary of man. So that concept is that we must stop putting this religious faith and this religious belief in the false notion that this is
You can hear me, you've lost me.
Sorry, that seems to me to be one of the most important aspects of change, or at least of reversion back to what should be.
Can you repeat your last paragraph, because you went blank there?
Oh, sure. I was just saying that it seems to me that of the most important thing that needs to be spread amongst the people, and the Pew Research Center just did a huge showing that we still are very much in theory or in name a Christian nation, that over 60 to 70 to 80% of the people believe still in the virgin birth story, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, about the Bible. But these people also believe that the Constitution and the United States itself is a Christian, is of a Christian foundation. And that, to me, seems to be the number one most important thing to dismiss, to get people to realize that is not the case. And it is also the reason why everything is so darned messed up, not just because it is not founded in God's law, but that it is diametrically and strictly opposed to any of its tenets. You quote in your book here Thomas James Norton, where you say our Constitution is a closed legal system that declares itself and the laws made pursuant to it to be the supreme law of the land, and that is the only law it allows. And Marbury versus Madison agrees when it says all laws which are repugnant to the Constitution are null and void. Sir, can you tell me, if all laws that are repugnant to the Constitution are null and void, what does that mean regarding Bible law?
Well, of course, we could go down a whole litany, a litany of Bible laws that the Constitutional Republic not only at this time doesn't recognize, but never would have recognized in the very beginning. And that's why if you can accept that there is only one standard by which everything, including the Constitution, must be ethically evaluated, and that is by God's morality, the God of the Bible's morality as codified or reflected in His commandments, statutes, and judgments. If you can come to that conclusion and you actually examine the Constitution, in fact, what I've done is novel in the sense that it doesn't seem anybody thought to have ever done it before, but it's not so novel that I think that any Christian who knows their Bible couldn't do the same thing as I have done. I am confident that if you will take the standard and examine this document by the standard, and we should all be able to agree on that standard if we're Christian, God's morality is found in His moral law, that when the document is tested by the standard, there is hardly an article or an amendment that is not antithetical, if not seditious, to our God. And therefore, once again, why are Christians so adamant about supporting a document that finds itself on almost every line contrary to what we find in the Scriptures? What's ironic is that it took 224 years for somebody to finally examine it by the standard. And I'm proof of 1 Corinthians 1. I claim 1 Corinthians 1, Clint, for myself, by the way, that God chooses the weak and the foolish to accomplish His purposes. That's me. And why He chose me and why it took so long, I don't know, other than I think this is indicative that we are probably at the very beginning of one of the most important paradigm shifts in America's history, and maybe only less paramount than what happened in the 1600s, and probably even more so because they only had to build a society upon God's laws. We have to now tear down one in order to rebuild what they started, the city on a hill, as it was described back in the 1600s. And I quite frankly, everybody looks around and sees things, so everything's gone wrong. Well, my favorite statement is everything goes wrong just right. And we're at maybe one of the most exciting times in history because we get to be a part of not only tearing down what is so vile, but we get to build. And that's really the point of all of this, is to put the emphasis on our God, put the emphasis on His perfect law, and rebuild and help to reestablish His kingdom here on earth as it is in heaven, His government as described in Isaiah 9 and verse 6, that rests upon Christ's shoulders. Mm. What an exciting time we live in. It's kind of like the two guys in the trenches. I'm sure you've heard the story, and one guy's just about to pee his pants, and the other guy says, "What's wrong with you? Everywhere you shoot, you've got somebody to shoot. Everywhere you look, you got somebody to shoot at." And that's kind of where we're at today.
Yeah, well, and what you're—I mean, to be clear, you're talking about the foundation, the Constitution, or the foundation of the country, the nation. And if the foundation is despoiled, if the foundation is built on the antithesis of the Bible, then yeah, obviously things need to be fixed.
It's what Christ described in Matthew 7, I believe it's 26 and 27, as the sand, because it wasn't built upon God's law word, which it was not, then it's built on sand, and great will be its fall. In other words, the Constitutional Republic was doomed from its inception. It's going to fall, just like all other
democracies.
Antithetical to God's have fallen in the past. It will fall, and the question is, are we going to be prepared, or will we have prepared a future posterity to be able to do it right just the next time?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, perhaps the most ironic part to all of this is that the small percentage, it turns out, of people that are actually, you know, it depends on who you ask, of course, those who actually do claim atheism and a specific, which is, by the way, a very important legal status because it means you must be governed because you can't govern yourself. You have no God before man. That's what atheism actually means in law. So that's a very dangerous place to be claiming to be, anyway.
I like that.
Right. Well, so what's incredible is that these people will, and I say this, Ted, because I used to be one of these people, okay? Most of the things I say, I know because I experienced it. You know, I used to think this, okay? I used to say, and as others do today, oh, religion is just mind control. And that's such an ironic statement, because the word government literally means to control the mind. Gouvernare, the Latin term for control or to steer, and mentis, the mind. Steer a ship, steer a vessel. See, and so it's so important to understand that government is religion. Religion is government. They're both the same thing. How do you control your own mind? You don't free it. You don't stop learning. You don't just accept what you see. You must, again, do your due diligence and learn and be attracted, let yourself be attracted to what is reasonable, what is logical, what is in tuned with nature and the natural law. I'm sorry to tell people that, but there is no government, secular government in the world that is in tune with that. And so when you say, you know, and if you think about it, all of our governments, Ted, are built-in temples, aren't they? They're, you know, a church is not meant to be a building. It's meant to be the people. You know, it's not meant to be a building or structure, you know, corporeal-centric. It's supposed to be a system of belief and an acting within that belief, despite all of the ceremonial crap that we see in government. And that's the important thing, I think, to get across to people. People like myself that used to think and claim that religion was mind control, and therefore I'm going to go to government, which actually is mind control defined. It's very interesting. And anyway, we'll be back with more with Ted Weiland. Stay tuned. All right, folks, we are back. We've been talking to Ted Weiland today. I really appreciate Ted joining us today. His website, BibleVersusConstitution.org. Ted, I'm going to put you on the spot here, my friend. I have the highest of respect for you. I got a comment. Now, one of the reasons that I am on this station is because I'm not afraid, and the hosts here and the station itself, one of the few out there that's actually published or syndicated, that's not afraid to talk about the thing you're not supposed to talk about, the thing that'll get you put in prison in other countries, including Canada, England, etc., Ireland, and that is the concept of the Jew. Now, in your book, you are very specific about what this concept of the Jewish people, known as Jews, actually are. And I wanted you to explain that because, you know, the general sentiment around here is, hey, and this is even a comment in our chat room, I'm not worried about the Mohammedans. I worry about the Christian Zionists, the fake Judaized Christians, the, if you will, the ignorance, but especially the Jews that are behind what is happening. Now, I noticed that your actual ministry is called missiontoisrael.org, and I just wanted to let you explain, you know, what is the difference between the concept of Jew and what, apparently you have a book called God's Covenant People, Yesterday, Today, and Forever, which actually might clear that up.
Yeah, certainly should, along with a book, and I'd probably recommend this book. This is from our other website, missiontoisrael.org. Excuse me, and let me say from the onset here that Mission to Israel has nothing, at least this Mission to Israel, has nothing to do with going over to the land of Palestine and rebuilding the temple over there. Furthest thing furthest thing from that. Let me begin in answering your question by dealing with the term Judeo-Christian, because the majority of Christianity, what used to be known, let's start back with Christendom, Christendom, D-O-M instead of D-U-M-B, what was originally Christendom, Christians involved in dominionizing on behalf of their Lord and King, the Christ, has evolved into what became merely Christianity, a four-walled religion, and worse, into what today is more often than not called Judeo-Christianity, an oxymoron if there ever was one.
Thank you.
The term Judeo stands for Judaism. Most people think Judaism is the religion of the Old Testament, and it's the farthest thing from it. Judaism, by their own testimony, is what Christ dealt with so vehemently, stood opposed to, for example, in Matthew 15, 6 through 9, and identified as the traditions of the elders that replaced the law of God, and which in circa 500 A.D. was codified into what today we know as the Babylonian Talmud. What most people don't know about the Babylonian Talmud, it is not a reflection of God's laws, his morality, and his ethics. It is the exact opposite of that on almost every count. It's the traditions of the elders versus the morality of God's law. And so to claim that we're a Judeo-Christian nation is oxymoronic. And note who gets first bidding, or top billing. Judeo does. And and along with some other religious influence as well, thanks to Amendment 1's free exercise clause, but Judaism, you know, people are concerned about, I refuse to call it abortion, it's infanticide, we've got to quit using the opponent's terms. Roe versus Wade was won because they identified it as abortion rather than infanticide. Had they identified it as infanticide, it had never made it to the courtrooms. But that aside, people are concerned, rightfully so, about infanticide, the millions of lives that are being taken from killed in their mother's wombs. Well, the laws on the books today in America under the Constitutional Republic reflect almost word for word what we find in the Talmud, even partial birth abortion, infanticide. Is described as such, almost what is found on the books today, in our book, and on the law books today. And so there's reason to be concerned. Judaism's influence, which is the traditions of the elders, which Christ stood against, it has influenced the direction of this country from the get-go, once Amendment 1 was established as a part of the law of the land. And particularly when Article 6, and this is where the Jewish influence came in mostly, the Christian test ban that's found in Article 6, which more importantly eliminated biblical qualifications, beginning with the first commandment, and which would eliminate it, whether it be Judaism or Jews or Muslims or Hindus from influencing the direction of this country. So that just barely touches upon it. There is also a problem today in that most people believe that today's Jews are the physical descendants of the biblical Israelites. They are not, for the most part. They are only proselytes to the religion of Judaism, which, don't forget, is Talmudism, which, don't forget, is merely the traditions of the elders. They aren't genetic Israelites, and therefore that's why this is mission to Israel is not a mission to go over and rebuild the temple over in Israel, because the people over there that have taken over the land haven't reestablished themselves. They've simply taken over the land and don't have any claim to it because they were never Israelites in the first place. God's covenant people is about that. The mystery of the Gentiles also deals with the true identity of today's Israelites, Judahites, Jews, and Gentiles. And the term Gentile in and of itself is, when you really study into the Hebrew and Greek words, Goyim and Ethne and find out what they really mean. They do not mean what most people think they mean, and it has a great impact on correctly identifying who's who today.
Well, I'll tell you what, we just have a couple more minutes. That was an excellent answer, by the way. I appreciate very much your knowledge and what you've shared today and in this book. Again, BibleVersusConstitution.org, MissionToIsrael.org. And Ted, why don't you finish out by telling people what other publications that you have, either from you or just on your website.
Okay, well, I would also point out, I think you mentioned this previously, you said a good part of the entire 565-page book, Bible Law versus the United States Constitution, The Christian Perspective, is online. Actually, the whole book is online. In fact, all but one of my books and our curriculum, we also have a curriculum, a teacher's guide and student workbook, designed around the primer, the 85-page primer that they can get by taking the survey. Except for those, all of my books we put online, so that if they can't afford to actually purchase a hard copy of my books, they're available from one or the other websites. And so the entire 565 pages is there. You don't have to buy a thing to be able to access that, and you can get the primer free, sent to you in the mail by taking the survey. I would also point them to our blog on Bible Law versus Constitution. They'll find articles such as, could you be a disciple of Baal and not know it? I'll give a little quickie here. Anybody who believes the Constitution is the supreme law of the land is a disciple of Baal. Baal is simply humanism. Baalism is humanism. And humanism, every man doing that which is right in his own eyes, is what we find the constitutional framers did with the Constitution. Instead of going to God, they went to their own Enlightenment Masonic concepts and established those as the laws of the land. We have a rights culture that's been created. In fact, I have an article entitled America's Road to Hell, Paved with Rights, and another one that's called Rights, Rights, Rights. Everyone wants their rights. But the road to hell in America has been paved with the whole rights culture created by the Enlightenment mindset. So I really encourage them to go and participate in our blog.
Sounds
then there's
good.
Just a whole list of online books at both websites, and of course then those books are available if they want them in hard copy as well. But I hope your people will take advantage, and there's already been several I checked while on the breaks, and there's been several that have already taken the Constitution survey.
Good. Well, unfortunately, Ted, we are out of time. The music is playing down, but I so appreciate you coming on. Hopefully we can have you back sometime. Again, missiontoisrael.org and BibleVersusConstitution.org. Thanks.